is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Pat Baldwin, head men's basketball coach at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Welcome to the 21st edition of the Coach's Corner Roundtable on the Hoopheads podcast. Each episode of the Coach's Corner Roundtable will feature our all-star lineup of guests answering a single basketball question. A new Coach's Corner Roundtable will drop around the 15th of each month. September's roundtable question is, what is something unique you do to create a competitive environment in your practices? Our coaching lineup this month includes Rob Brost from Bolingbrook High School, Eric Bueller from Chatfield High School, Chris Delisio from Olmsted Falls High School, Danny Gallagher from Magnificat High School, Joe Harris from Lake Chelan High School, Bobby Jordan from Wagner College, Alicia Komaki from Sierra Canyon High School, Pascal Muirs, Belgian professional basketball coach, JP Nurbin, Thrive on Challenge, Nate Sanderson, Thrive on Challenge, Dave Severns, Los Angeles Clippers, Don Showalter from USA Basketball, John Schulman from the University of Alabama Huntsville, Joe's Decision from Unleashed Potential, Lee Swanson from Bunker Hill High School, Jonathan Sippis from the University of Wisconsin, and Todd Wolfson from St. Francis High School. Please enjoy this roundtable episode of the Hoopheads podcast, and once you're finished listening, please give the show a 5-star rating and review. Make sure you're subscribed to the Hoopheads pod so you never miss an episode. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. If you haven't already, please tell a coaching colleague or friend about the Hoopheads podcast so they can listen and learn from some of the best minds in the game. Get registered for our Hoopheads Pod webinar series too. If you're focused on improving your coaching and your team, we've got you covered. Visit hoopheadspod.com/webinars to claim your seat. Make sure you check out our other great basketball podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod network of shows, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, plus our newest NBA team podcasts, Cavaliers Central, Grizz and Grind, and Nuck If You Buck. Lastly, if you're looking for podcast management, editing, or launch services, check out mypodcastmanager.com. Get ready to hear from some great coaches about how they make their practices more competitive. Rob Brost, Bolingbrook High School, Bolingbrook, Illinois.
What's up, Hoopshead Roundtable number 21. This is Rob Brost, head boys basketball coach at Bolingbrook High School. Today's question, what is something you do to create a competitive environment in your practices? I don't know if this is necessarily unique or not, but we put everything on the clock, everything is timed, and everything is scored. So once we start practice, we have a little pre-practice session, and then we have a stretching. But once practice starts, everything is on the clock, and everything is scored. So that translates into competition really all the time. So no matter what we're doing, everything's on the clock, everything is scored. So it may seem simple, might not be that unique, but that's what we do to remain competitive. Also, we chart everything. All of our shooting is charted, and so that becomes competitive as well. So we chart everything, time everything, and score everything. So that's what we do at Bolingbrook High School. Great to be back with you guys. The Hoopshead podcasts are the way to go. Happy to participate. Hope everybody's doing well, and we'll talk soon.
Eric Bueller, Chatfield Senior High School, Littleton, Colorado.
Hey, what's going on, Hoopheads? This is Eric Bueller, head coach at Chatfield Senior High School. And this month we were asked, what is something that we do to make our practices competitive? And I don't think we do anything special. One thing that we really like to do is we try to find situations to make one team have an advantage and force the other team to either come back from being down or play against more players or have less players that they're playing with. We accomplish this in many different ways. Sometimes it's in the full court, sometimes it's in the half court. We use a lot of short-sighted games to simulate defensive rotations, getting beat badly on the dribble, things along those lines. Another thing we do is we assign points and we make things games. So we have a rebounding drill we do where you actually earn points by getting rebounds, and you also earn points by getting offensive rebounds. So we just want to add a point total to something to make it more competitive and make it so that the players want to win the game. And if we can make everything a game, hopefully they'll want to do the drill. They won't just want to go through the motions. They'll want to win the game. And there's always a consequence. That's another thing we add to make things more competitive. If you don't win, then there's got to be a consequence for not winning the game. And there's also a reward sometimes as well for winning the game. So that's all I got this month. And hope everyone out there is staying safe. Talk to you later. Bye.
Chris Delisio, Olmsted Falls High School, Olmsted Falls, Ohio.
Hey, Hoopheads. Chris Delisio from Olmsted Falls. Roundtable this week on a competitive environment that we do in our practice. And even though we try to make everything competitive, I think one of the unique ones that we have that we really like is what we did with our shooting, because you can get caught up in so many shooting drills during the year, that we've created four individual and four team shooting drills that we do all year. And we have a dry erase chart in our gym that we keep track of our shooting records, and we compete shooting wise. So every time we do a shooting drill, whether it be team or individual, it's a competition. So our guys really work hard to try to get their names up on the board or surpass somebody. We even keep track of the records over the years as far as who's had the most through all of our teams. And it's a really nice competitive thing to do, because shooting can be something that kids don't always compete at or really work at. And with so many shooting drills out there, you can kind of get caught up in trying, you know, more and more and more, when really I think the goal is just to get shots up that are game speed. And this certainly helps do that, because the kids are moving at a fast pace to try to get more shots up to beat the last score or to get to the top of the record board. So hopefully that helps. Thank you.
Danny Gallagher, Magnificat High School, Rocky River, Ohio.
Hello, this is Danny Gallagher from Magnificat High School. This month's roundtable question is, what is something unique you do to create a competitive environment in your practices? One thing that we started doing 2 years ago was we track every free throw that's shot in practice all season long. So at the end of each week, we'll announce a free throw winner. And then at the end of the season, at our postseason banquet, we give out an award for the highest shooting free throw percentage combined in practice and in games. It's just something that has been fun for the girls, something that they look forward to do each day in practice, and has definitely led to an increase in our free throw percentage throughout the season.
Joe Harris, Lake Chelan High School, Lake Chelan, Washington.
Hello, Hoopheads. This is Joe Harris at Chelan High School with this month's roundtable question. What is something unique you do to create a competitive environment in your practice? I believe to gain that competitive edge, it has to be a mindset that you instill in your players as soon as they walk into the gym for practice, for games, everything in between, that they need to be competitive. You have to expect your players to be competitive before your teams can be competitive. There's a number of drills that you can do in practice to gain that competitive edge. what we have used extensively is a disadvantage drills where you put your offense or your defense at a disadvantage and force them to be real competitive in situations. A couple of those would be 2-on-2, no dribble against pressure to get the ball to the half line, a 3-on-4 rebounding drill, and 5-on-5 situations. You can limit the fouls and have your teams play really, really hard-nosed defense without calling fouls. You can go next hoop wins regardless of the score. Coach Neighbors has a library full of competitive drills. One that comes to mind is score, stop, score. A drill that we've had great success with is one we call finish it, where your offense is either up one or down one with 15 seconds left, and you have the offense run it down and back, and then they have to come and finish out the game either up one or down one against the fresh defense. Any of these can, and if you do them consistently and instill that mindset of being competitive, will help your teams gain that competitive edge.
Bobby Jordan, Wagner College, Staten Island, New York.
One way at Wagner that we create a competitive environment in our practices is we have a win chart. It's something that we introduced towards the end of the last season. And the win chart is not just for 5-on-5 or 3-on-3 or, you know, any game-like situation, but the win chart is for everything. It's for a sprint in practice. A guy gets a win. It's for shooting drills. Guys can get wins depending on how many shots they make. So just instituting that win chart and posting that in our locker room on a weekly basis got the guys' competitive juices flowing because they did not want to be at the bottom of the chart. They want to be at the top of the chart. So it forced our guys to run harder during sprints to win, to take game shots every single time during shooting drills because they wanted to make the most shots in the drill. So the win chart was a great way to create a competitive environment in our practices last year.
Alicia Kamaki, Sierra Canyon High School in Chatsworth, California.
I'm going to give two out-of-the-box answers as to what contributes to our competitive practice environment. The first is we place a huge emphasis on nutrition. And if we constantly are having 10 of 15 players coming in, they're lethargic, they're lacking energy from their diet, we wouldn't have productive practices. So we truly think that this emphasis on nutrition allows us to compete on a daily basis. And the second is that we record every single practice from roughly 7 different angles. And so the girls know how much we watch and we review film. And I think that it keeps them honest in most of their efforts. So two kind of out of the box thinking on what contributes to our competitive practices at Sierra Canyon.
Pascal Muirs, Belgian professional basketball coach.
Actually, it's quite funny when I think about it. For years, for sure, at the beginning of my career, practice after practice, I would be yelling at my team to finish the plays in any kind of drill. Whether we talk about a half-court one-on-one drill or a shell drill or whatever it is, I would see myself always yelling out loud for effort to finish the play. To players in offense, I would be yelling, go and follow your shot, go for the offensive rebound. And for defense, of course, I would do the opposite, yell to box out, to keep on fighting, stay aggressive till we have possession. But basically, it never had success because for me, it wasn't working. And now, since a couple of years for myself, yeah, I think I found the solution. And I call it Nets game. At Nets game, basically, that means you can run it in any half-court drill, one-on-one, two-on-two, defensive rotations, shell drill, whatever kind of drill you do. But Nets games means that the player that takes the ball out of the net for the next possession, he can play an offense again. What it brings to my game, to my practices, well, that's quite impressive. because you see players fighting all over the place to go and grab the rebound. Even if that ball is bouncing, rolling outside of court, they keep going at it to play an offense next time. So for me, it really adds something to the overall intensity of my practice. And that's my purpose. And maybe on practice we overdo it, but that's the way I like it. Overdo it on practice to have a good and high, steady intensity during the game. So for me, that works perfect.
If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started. JP Nurbin from Thrive On Challenge.
Hey, this is JP Nurbin from ThriveOnChallenge.com and the current head coach at the Liffey Celtics Pro Team in Ireland. Absolutely love this question because one of my core values is competition. So over the years, I've really tried to make more and more of our practice competitive, but I think I've always struggled on when there's a winner or a loser, what to do, right? I never really liked running the losers for many reasons. Just one being, I think it takes away from practice time. And also, I just want my players to compete hard, not necessarily because they're running, but because they just want to win. You want those competitive athletes, right? So over time, what I've kind of created is a competitive cauldron. I know Pete Carroll runs one at the Seahawks, and Anson Dorns runs it at North Carolina, and I know a lot of NBA teams run it as well. It's really been a foundational system for my teams, as well as the dozens of coaches I've supported through my work with TOC. The competitive culture, really, at the end of the day, it's a simple system to help you objectively track and rank your players based upon their practice performance. And what you end up getting is players who are more bought into their role and they are more competitive in practice. You know, over the years, though, we've kind of developed more and more guiding principles just to make sure it keeps it as a healthy competitive environment and also keeps the players focused on the process, not just the results. I've also developed a kind of a spreadsheet, which makes it super, super simple to record, to track, and then rank the players and multiple categories based on their win percentage, which is important because certain players may miss a practice or they've been injured, or certain players will just play more games. So you want to use win percentage. Really over a decade of coaching, I tried to motivate players, with the speeches. Also struggled, like many of you probably, with dealing with complaints about the playing time because they felt like they deserved a bigger role. But in our experience of running the cauldron, it's not going to save you your practice time, but you don't have to work on using those motivational tricks as well as it just gives you that data. So when you're having those hard conversations with the athlete or even sometimes the parent, you have that objective practice data, especially because our game data is so skewed, it's so limited, and people are always questioning that. But practice data seems to be much more credible. And my recommendation for coaches that may be interested in this is just to really start tracking wins and losses in your practice. Do it on your practice plan. It's just a really simple way to do that and start to look at that data. You start to do that, you're going to create a more intrinsically motivated culture and competitive culture as opposed to something that's really extrinsically motivated. Also, feel free to reach out to me. My email is jpnurbin@thriveonchallenge.com if you've got any interest in my spreadsheet or training course on the competitive cauldron. Yeah. Once again, my email is jpnurbin@thriveonchallenge.com.
Nate Sanderson, Thrive On Challenge.
Hey, Mike. This is Nate Sanderson from Thrive On Challenge, and I'm going to share just a few ways that we try to raise the level of competitiveness in our practices. And the first thing that I would say is that over the last few years, about 90% of what we do in practice is game-based. And what that means to us is that we're trying to compete, we're trying to teach our techniques and our fundamentals and our skill development all in the context of a game. And oftentimes that also includes trying to keep score, even in our one-on-ones, our two-on-twos, our advantage or disadvantage drills. We're always trying to find creative ways to keep track of winners and losers. And sometimes that's done by team, sometimes that's done by individuals. Now, many coaches are probably familiar with scoring the process and not necessarily just determining winners and losers based on made baskets or won possessions. And that's something that we also spend a lot of time on, is trying to create constraints and rules or a scoring system that rewards our players for doing the things that we want them to do on a particular possession. In other words, we may add bonus points defensively for deflections. We might add a bonus point for an offensive rebound. We might play where a team gets a bonus point if they shoot it at the rim or if they shoot an uncontested three-point shot. In many ways, the more you can make your small-sided games or your scrimmage activities like a video game, where they're, I think of these types of examples as like Mario Brothers, where, you know, Mario and Luigi jump up and they hit the bricks and out come these coins, you know, that when players do things right that reflect your process, that they're rewarded in the scoring system. Now, the question then becomes, well, what do we do with the results of the scoring system? So let me give you a couple creative ideas as far as that goes. Number one, we oftentimes will keep track of our winners and losers, and we don't necessarily always share that data publicly, but we do like to keep track of it and talk about it as a coaching staff using a competitive cauldron, similar to what Brian McCormick or JP Nurbin have created templates for that, where over the course of a season, you can get a player's winning percentage and the things that you're scoring in practice. Now, we've done that in a more short-term effect as well, where, you know, we may take a Wednesday practice where we need to really add some energy, knowing that there's a team dinner that night. We might do six, you know, or seven competitive games where we're tracking our winners and losers, and whoever accumulates the most points at the end of the night, they get to eat first at the next team dinner. We've also experimented over the years with a shooting ladder, and that's simply doing competitive shooting drills in season and out of season. We rank our players 1 to 15 based on the results, and then during the week, one goes against two in a best of three kind of shooting series, three goes against four, five goes against six, etc. And then the next time that we do that, either in the following week or the second time we might do it in that particular week, two would go against three, four would go against five, and you're continuing to kind of reshuffle your ladder in these head-to-head matchups. Again, it doesn't necessarily always mean there's a game context in our shooting, but it does add a little bit of competitiveness to it, and that ladder we do share with our team and make public throughout the year. The last thing I'll share with you here today, Mike, is that we also have a tradition in our program of something that we call the Shooting Olympics. And you know how it is when you get into your practices over winter break, those practices sometimes can be long and, you know, you're maybe 15, 16 days between competitions. So we try to break that up with this thing we call the Shooting Olympics. And that's typically 10 of our favorite shooting drills. We break our teams, and this is 9 through 12, into mixed age group teams of three, four, five players. They all compete in these 10 events. They have come up with team names and entrance music. They have to do a skit when their team is announced. We do the national anthem, and then at the end of the event, we do a medal ceremony. We actually roll out the stand that the wrestlers use to give away medals at the end of their tournaments. We take pictures of the whole thing. We promote it on social media, and it's just become kind of a fun thing. Again, there's some basketball skill involved. Players are mixed up with kids from different levels and different teams, and it creates a little bit of competitiveness. And one of the fun things about that is that if a team or when a team wins the gold medals one year, they are required or asked to come back, even if they've graduated, to defend those medals in the following year. And so it's become this event that even our alumni pay attention to after they've graduated. And one final idea I'll share with your audience here is we've at times done a king or a queen of the court competition as well. I can think back to doing this in our middle school camps, particularly where we might, again, script 6, 7, maybe 8 competitive drills. The players are broken up over the 6 baskets in the gym. And we simply do, if you win at your basket, you move up a level, you move up a basket. If you are the lowest score at your basket, then you move down a basket. And so after each competitive game or each competitive drill, we are reshuffling those groups. The better players are moving up the ladder, trying to get to the queen's court. And those, again, that are maybe not doing as well are sifting their way down the ladder. But that becomes kind of another fun way to be able to reward players for competing during practice.
Dave Severns from the Los Angeles Clippers.
Question for Mike Cleansing in the Hoopshead podcast. The one thing that I've seen that's very unique is having the players run the entire practice, where the coaches just sit on the sideline, don't say a word, and watch the players run and organize a practice. Thanks. This is Dave Severns from the LA Clippers.
Don Showalter, USA Basketball.
Hey, Don Showalter here from USA Basketball. The question is, what is something unique you do to create a competitive environment in your practices? Well, I think, first of all, if you want to have a competitive drill or a competitive environment, there's two things you have to do. Either use time or score. So you use time, and in fact, you have to make so many baskets in a certain period of time, or you have to do a certain ball handling drill in a certain period of time. So time and score is really critical if you're going to have a competitive practice. The other thing I think, it's really good to have a competitive start to your practice. So you put a competitive drill in right away in practice to get the mindset of your team ready. I think it's really important to have your team have a mental approach to practice that is very high level. And by putting in a competitive drill to start your practice, this elevates the level of your players.
John Shulman, University of Alabama Huntsville and the 720 Sports Group.
Yes, this is John Shulman, head basketball coach at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. And the question is, what is something unique you do to create a competitive environment in your practices? I will tell you this. I used to be a drill guy, and we used to drill and drill and drill and do fundamentals, and you still have to do that. You cannot get bored with the basics, as we say. You have to do that. You got to focus on the fundamentals, and you have to do drill work, and you have to be able to jump to the ball defensively, and you have to be able to pivot and pass and shoot. But if you don't make your practices competitive in today's world, you're going to lose your kids, and they're going to be miserable, and they're going to hate coming to practice, and you're not going to get anything out of them. So I will tell you this, and we do a lot of shooting competitions here at UAH, because we take pride in shooting that ball. So we do a lot of shooting competitions, but the first 30 minutes after our shooting, the first 30 minutes, we will play. We've got a bunch of kids in this program. We'll play 5-on-5-on-5, and we'll play make it take it. So we'll play 5-on-5, and we're going to run our offense in the half court and, make it take it. So if you score, you stay. Next team comes on. And if you score and score and score and score, you stay the whole time. We will keep score of that. And we'll play 3 10-minute sessions. I will change up teams after the first 10 and after the second 10. But that has become – the kids have fun. They take pride in it. We get to coach them. But we're not stopping and starting practice all the time. And this is really – was when we did this was really February. And so we're running our offense, but we're competing. And I'm telling you, that's 30 minutes of competition. The kids have a blast. They play hard. And that is the most, it's probably the best thing that I've done in practice in a long time, just to make it take it. I tell you this, you know, when we used to do a shell drill and 4-on-4-on-4, and I loved it, but you got a point for a stop and you got a point for a charge, you got 2 points for an offensive rebound. By the time we tried to keep score, it was a debacle, and guys were getting pissed off, and it'd take you 15, it'd take you a master's degree in calculus to figure out the scoring system. Sometimes just make it easy, and you get a stop, you get a point, and the team that scores gets a point, and it is what it is. So I just think, you know, I think it's a great question. And I think if you don't make things competitive in practice, you're going to lose your kids these days. It's not when I started coaching in the early 90s, you could drill your team to death, and they took it and they did what they're supposed to. Nowadays, you do that, you're going to lose your team. You got to make things competitive. The last thing I will say, I like this at the end of I think playing a 2-minute game, score tied, with two to play and jump it up, or play a 3-minute game or four minute game. I think you get a lot of different special situations in there, but I think they compete and it's a 2-minute game, play one every single day, or play a 3-minute game or play a 4-minute game. But I think that will help them compete and get that out of them. But also, I think it helps teach a lot of different things if you talk about different situations afterwards. Try to, as best as you can, keep your mouth shut during, and then talk to them afterwards. Hopefully this helps, and good luck. Have a great year.
Joe Stasizian, Unleashed Potential, Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
Joe Stasizian, Unleashed Potential. This month's question is, what is something unique you do to create a competitive environment in practice? I really love this question because I actually have been speaking on this with my competitive edge model. I speak on this when I speak for USA Basketball at their coach academies across the nation, and speaking at some Canada basketball events and some worldwide events, I also speak on this. So it's something that I really think is a big part of what I do, whether you're talking about player development, individual groups, teams, or coaching your own team. My model basically is all about competition. So, you know, rather than just working on a skill, when we work on a skill, we will put some type of competition to each skill that we are developing. And it's like I always say, I really believe you have to learn how to compete. It's something that you have to teach players how to do, to show them what it looks like, what competing looks like, and then put them in those situations. It's sort of like with, I just feel like it's a learned behavior. Sort of goes along with hard work. Learning how to work hard today is a bottom step of the ladder. It's a learned behavior, I feel, that you have to show players what hard work looks like. And I just heard an interesting thing. Kara Lawson, a new head women's coach at Duke University, just spoke about the difference between hard work and competing. And I totally agree with everything she said. There are two separate things. You know, you can work hard and still not compete. So I think at every practice, in every training that you do, there has to be a competition, whether it's a time and score thing against going against yourself, or whether it's something that you're going against another player in practice or in a training. So, for instance, when we do our ball handling workouts and our player development, we will incorporate a one-versus-one competition with different ball handling moves, where the players face each other and there's a cone put in between you, and you have to both attack. On the word attack, you attack in a first person, you know, maybe add a move or two or a counter move, and they have to get to that cone first. So whether it's competing like that, or even with learning how to move without the ball, you know, we have developed competing drills on learning how to move without the ball. So you take you make a square. So you have a square, you have four corners, and you put a player in each corner. You put a player in the middle, and they have to learn to compete like the person in the middle has to react to the people exchanging at the corners. And when they exchange, the person in the middle, the first person to that corner gets to stay in that corner, and the person who doesn't get to a corner goes to the middle. So there's all kinds of things that you can do to create competition, whether it's for every aspect of basketball, whether it's moving without the ball, whether it's ball handling, whether it's shooting, whether it's one-on-one. We incorporate a ball handling competition where you have, where you run the, you dribble, around a 3-point line. You have one player behind the other, and they each have a ball. So the person in front, as they're going around the 3-point line, handling the ball, when they cross over and go to the basket, the person behind them can then now also attack the basket after they initially, the person in front of them initially crosses to the basket. So that gives some ball handling, it gets some one-on-one action, and first person to score the layup wins the competition. And, you know, and the same thing for shooting. There's all kinds of shooting competitions that you can do. So the point is, you know, that to me was what I really have found to be a very, very effective way to incorporate competition into every practice, every workout, no matter what you do. You know, we do a drill with USA Basketball. You know, I've been fortunate enough to work with a lot with USA Basketball, and we do a drill where it's just a passing and a pivoting drill, moving without the ball and communicating. You have two teams and each team has a ball. So your object is to pass the ball, move without the ball with your team, and try to catch and touch a player on the other team without dribbling the basketball, just being able to pivot. So that's a team competition thing that you can do. So no matter what you do, rather than just working on a skill, I think you're more efficient in your practice plan or training plan if you can incorporate some competition. Plus, they're getting the advantage of, you know, people talk about small-sided games and things like that. You're getting an advantage of those kinds of things. The other thing we do is 3-on-3 cutthroat. We do that all through our USA Basketball camps, clinics, junior national teams. We play 3-on-3 cutthroat. And we also incorporate the FIBA rules. The FIBA rules are 3-on-3. It's just another way to do it. We just had a program here at Unleashed Potential. We have a 3-on-3 program that we incorporate now and then for middle school and high school. And we play 3-on-3 cutthroat, and we play 3-on-3 with the FIBA rules. So I just think that, you know, that's how kids get better by competing, and that's how they learn how to compete. Again, you know, I just feel like that's something you have to teach them and show them how to compete. Because at the end of the day, if a player keeps losing and losing, they're gonna continue to work on their skills and get motivated to get better, to be able to be a better competitor. And I know, you know, as a player development coach, I get calls from all over the country from every level of college basketball, coaches calling. And one of the first things they ask me is, does the player compete? So, you know, competing is at the top of the list. If you want to play college basketball or high school basketball or any level of basketball beyond the, you know, the very, you know, the introductory levels that, and, you know, we even do that at the introductory levels. We start to incorporate some basic games, small-sided games of competition. I've found that I work with a lot of Olympic coaches and national coaches the last couple of years. And one of the things that they seem to do is they seem to get their kids competing maybe at a younger age than we do here. So I see some, you know, good things from that, and you try to incorporate some of those things in what we do. So I hope that helps. Feel free to contact me anytime. I could spend, I promise when I go and speak to people, to programs and coaches and different clinics, I guarantee them that I will give them 100 game transferable competitive skill development situations, performance training situations that they can immediately incorporate to any system that they're using. So if you ever have any questions, feel free to contact me. Thank you.
Lee Swanson, Bunker Hill High School, Claremont, North Carolina.
So this week's question was, how do we make practices more competitive, something unique we do to make them more competitive? Over the years, I think, you know, as a program, we've done numerous things, such as maybe my favorite was have a practice player of the week who we got a championship belt. And we had measurable categories, you know, whether how many dives they had on the floor, how many rebounds, how many charges taken, how many fist pounds to their teammates. So not all of it was on scoring, but that's one of the ways to kind of individually make it competitive. I think most coaches would tell you we pretty much have a time or score or something to make it competitive in everything that we do. One of my favorite drills I kind of stole from Mike Dunlap was our 3-on-3 winner's court and loser's court on both ends, where you kind of have a – if you win, you stay on the winner's court. If not, you get a loser's court, and whoever has the most winner's courts wins is going to stay on. So there's all sorts of ways to make practices competitive and make them interesting. At the end of the day, hopefully you've got players who are driven to compete. And that makes it even better. We've been very fortunate to have that. So if you can make your practices competitive, you get a much better chance to win on whatever night you're going to go play.
Jonathan Sippis, the University of Wisconsin.
Hey, Hoopheads. This is head coach Jonathan Sippis with the University of Wisconsin women's basketball program. One thing we do that I think is pretty unique that helps drive a competitive environment in our practice is the use of a foam oversized dice. With our practice plan each day, we make sure that we've outlined drills that we know are that are going to have a distinct winner and loser. And when those drills are completed, we have somebody on the losing team roll that dice, which is a six-sided dice. Also on the practice plan, 1 through 6, we have a matching fundamental skill with each number that is usually something that's a minute or less to complete. It's a fundamental skill that is a positionless skill. For example, a one is usually a non-dominant hand ball handling drill that they have to complete 2 lengths of the floor to there and backs, as well as a half court and back in 32 seconds. A four might be something we feel like certain days that we need to really work on pass, catch, and finish at a good speed. We'll put a minute up and we'll do four-spot passing and layup drill. And again, you can change those based on what fundamentals earlier in the season. Maybe you're really trying to emphasize or certain areas that you know for a specific game coming up that you've got to be able to compete with at a high level. I'm a big believer that teams win games when they win a majority of the smaller battles throughout the game. We feel like using the foam dice and the consequence 1 through 6 helps us maintain that every day in practice and the importance of it. It also, we have our point guards always jump in, even if they're on the winning team, to make sure that they understand they've got to be able to steer the ship during good times and bad. So it's helped us. You can get a set of these dice. They come in a 2-pack on Amazon for about $12. They're pretty durable, I can tell you that. Nobody on your team should like to roll the dice, but being a foam dice, they can get shot all over the gym, and kids are rooting for certain numbers to come up when really every number is pretty equal as far as what it's going to take for them to be able to accomplish that task. Look forward to hearing everybody else's ideas. Have a great day and good luck with adding to a competitive environment for your practices.
Todd Wolfson, St. Francis High School, La Cunada, California.
This is Todd Wolfson from St. Francis High School in Pasadena, California. And one of the things that we do that's unique to create a competitive environment in our practices, first, you know, we start out every day when we stretch, and there's pretty loud music going on when we stretch. It kind of gets the guys in a good mindset, you know, have a little fun, and kind of set the mood for practice. And then the first two drills we do each day are extremely competitive. One of them is a team competition where they have to do it all together. And if they don't complete the task at hand together as a team, then they start off with some running. And the second one is an individual or sometimes a 2-on-2 competitive drill that kind of just gets them going as well. And that kind of sets the tone for practice. So if stretching is fun and enjoyable, and there's a good environment there, and then the first two drills are competitive, it makes practice start off on the right foot and tells the guys, you know, we're ready to compete right from the jump. Once again, Todd Wolfson from St. Francis High School, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for checking out this month's Hoopheads Podcast Roundtable. We'll be back next month with another question for our all-star lineup of coaches.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.